So I did think it was weird that one of the scenes in the trailer where he's like, are you sure you want to call it Ant-Man, wasn't in the actual film? And because that's what I think a lot of audiences were asking who don't know anything about Marvel Comics, like, Ant-Man?
Yeah.
Why would I go see that? That sounds dumb.
Yes, the peasants were asking questions like that.
Exactly. Well, then with the Man from U.N.C.L.E., they're really just confused.
What, the Man from U.N.C.L.E.? U.N.C.L.E.'s a place now?
Is that the like... Man from U.N.C.L.E. and the Ant-Man.
The Ant-Man. Yeah. Aunt May?
Aunt May and the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Is this about Aunt May?
Wait, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Ben.
All these wasps in the room.
Oh, I'll see what you did there. I liked it. Anyway, we are here to review the new, the first film in Marvel's Phase 3, Ant-Man.
Is it the first? I thought it was the last of Phase 2.
Yeah, it's
the last
of Phase 2.
Oh, is it considered to be the last of Phase 2?
Yes.
Even though it came out after the Avengers?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So you've shut your dream horn out.
That makes no sense to me.
Phase 3 starts next year.
It's more of a, like, 2.5.
So is Captain America 3 considered part of Phase 2?
That's the beginning of Phase 3.
That's the beginning of Phase 3.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is why you should stick around after the credits.
Yeah, there might be a reference to that.
I think people who... seen Marvel movies know that already.
Yeah.
Except for like half the people in our audience, but whatever.
Wait, but Avengers didn't have one at the end. I felt so good.
Yeah,
dipped.
They made a big point of saying, like, everywhere on the press, there will not be one after the credits of the Avengers.
Everybody was like, you can have Spider-Man, right? And it's like, no, you've been lied to.
We don't have the rights yet, and we haven't even cast him.
And before you ask, no, Spider-Man's not in this. It's just the first Marvel film that references him, however obliquely.
Yeah.
But we are the Unusual Suspects. I'm Chris.
JC.
Bo.
Jenny.
Elliot.
Joe.
We got a full house this time, as you can tell, because everybody always wants to go see the new Marvel films. And this one is taking sort of a very old school tact in that basically they remade Iron Man, except made him where he was very small.
Yes. And they also made it more enjoyable.
Than Iron Man?
I'm one of the few people who's like, I like the first two-thirds of Iron Man, and then I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah.
Now, one of the most boring... I think the fight between Iron Man and Ironmonger is one of the most boring in the
Marvel
Cinematic
Universe. Okay, now you're right. You're right.
I'll give you that.
I think it's the only problem with the third act of Iron Man, though.
Yes, unfortunately, it's the third act.
Whereas in this, I think it kind of has trouble. It stumbles a bit at first. It has trouble getting where it wants to go. It has a lot of exposition.
Yeah.
So it's very exposition-heavy in the front, and you're kind of like, okay, can we move this along? And then the third act and the actual big fight you're waiting for is by far the best part of the actual film.
I don't know if I agree that it's like Iron Man. I didn't get that vibe at all.
Are you kidding me?
Really? Well, I'm not kidding. That's why I said it.
It's the first Marvel film in a long time to have like a true origin story.
Yeah,
it's kinda,
sure.
It's the first.
But that doesn't make it just like Iron Man.
It deals with a guy with a robot suit. It deals with the fight between two guys who work for the same company.
Okay,
one who's old and one who's young. Except it reverses them, where now it's the young guy who's the bad guy and the old guy who's the good guy.
No, I mean I look at this movie and it. It shows the maturity of the Marvel Universe that they use the Marvel Universe in a way Iron Man never could to make that movie better. Like, instead of it's his father's already dead and he's trying to redeem the Stark name, it's the guy seeing what has happened to his company and having to find his spiritual successor.
Well, I didn't say it was identical, Elliot.
Okay.
I think it's that part where he says, I am Iron Man, that kind of threw people off.
Right? Exactly.
I gotta play with the popular crowd at this point and say, yeah. It felt a lot like Iron Man. No, there are definitely some similar structural elements.
Yeah.
You know, just in the way that it's laid out, like, if you put Ant-Man into a flowchart, that flowchart would... Don't you roll your fucking eyes at me, lawyer!
Let's never forget. Grown-ass man.
It's about a big company being misused and being turned to make dangerous weapons to sell.
But is that what every Marvel movie has?
True. Well, yeah, and that being said, I mean, the thing that this does have identical with the first Iron Man movie especially, is it feels really fresh because this is new territory. We're not having to deal with the baggage that we have to deal with in, say, Age of Ultron. This isn't an interstitial movie in any way. It's you know, more or less completely new ground. They even move out to San Francisco, a place we've never really explored in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it was
just nice to not have to play any game of memory.
Yeah. And there's some, definitely, they still have to do some exposition because A, it's an unusual superhero that most people aren't familiar with, and you have to go through the whole bit like, he shrinks and he talks to ants. And then they've added in this extra thing of, well, this wasn't the original Ant-Man. The original Ant-Man was Michael Douglas's character.
So you have backstory.
He was operating in the 80s.
You have backstory for two characters to deliver, and there's a lot of, I think a lot of the reason it's so exposition heavy as well is because this character as a superhero is a hard sell from the get-go. I mean, like, he can shrink really small, but his punches are just like a normal person's punches when he's really small. So they have to kind of keep reminding you that that's a thing.
Which becomes very apparent in the fight scenes. I don't know why they felt they had to remind you all that much.
Well, just so people don't go, why would that happen?
Why would that happen? Well, yeah. Because it never would.
Well, they were also cherry-picking when mass actually mattered.
True.
So yeah, and then you have to tell the story of Paul Rudd, who is ostensibly Ant-Man in this, the main hero, who was an engineer, and he was working for a company that was very corrupt. He whistleblowed on them, nothing came of it, so he basically went in there as a cat burglar, hacked their system, gave all of their money away to worthy causes, and then went to prison for that.
As you would.
And now he's trying to get back on his feet, and he's also trying to redeem himself in the eyes of his daughter, which is very similar to the original Ant-Man, Michael Douglas's character, Hank Pym, who was a secret agent, working very hush-hush as the original Ant-Man, who nobody knew about. And now it seems like his Corey Stoll, who plays Yellow Jacket in this,
was once his protege.
He's trying to capitalize upon the shrinking tech that nobody's been able to reproduce since Hank Pym said, "Nope, I'm done. I'm out. Nobody gets it but me."
And he is like, he's got the crazy eyes, pretty much.
and that's. There were two things I felt really that were weak in this, and one was I felt like the emotional journey of the characters was summed up a little too fast and a little too pat.
Yeah,
as far as the conflicts between the characters, and they never really give you any explanation. That really sets as far as why Corey Stoll is completely fucking crazy in this, other than, well, you've been around these Pym particles for too long and they're driving you psychotic. And it's like,
why would they drive her psychotic?
What about the other people?
Well, they did say that the helmet was specially designed to be the protection against that.
Right.
But even so, if you do it long enough, it's going to start to fuck with your body.
Yeah.
It's insinuated if you do this long enough, it's going to start fucking with you.
Well, that is a storyline throughout the Avengers, actually, the old comic book, is that Hank Pym gets, like, because of all of his
shrinking and growing,
he gets a little fucked up. And
he gets schizophrenic and becomes Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know. I just watched it, and I just sort of thought it was his character from House of Cards. I was like, this is what happened. And once he got out of that garage, and he went to California.
No, he knows that the strain invasion is coming. At this point, all bets are off.
He'll always be the nice guy from Law and Order LA that I was the only person who watched him in.
Well, wasn't that when Anthony Anderson was in that?
Anthony Anderson, really?
He was
just in the regular Law and Order.
Dr. Octopus was up there.
He's actually going to turn into Ernest Hemingway, but not just any Ernest Hemingway.
Robo Ernest Hemingway! Robo Ernest Hemingway punch!
I hardly wait for him to join the Avengers. So, thank you for giving the plot, because I was not looking forward to explaining that.
I've read a lot of comic books.
There was a part where they referenced like a comic book title that's very significant, and I could hear you laugh in the movie theater.
Oh, there's a lot of things, like when they go past the crappy hotel Paul Rudd's character is staying in is the Hotel Milgram, which is Al Milgram, who's a guy who's worked with all kinds of Marvel comics, including Ant-Man and the Avengers, but that was my little, I know more than you nerds.
No, it's like, I don't know classic Marvel as well as you, so like I was like just listening for your laugh, like, okay, that's something I should have noticed.
They've dropped something here.
I thought like there are some interesting choices in here, some of which don't work as well as I think they were hoping to. I like Paul Rudd a lot, I really do, but maybe he was almost too nice. You know? I wanted him to have a little bit more of an edge than he did, and I think that part of that took away from... They're trying to make him, you know, kind of funny off the cuff, and it never really completely works because they're working this fine line. No, but he's such a sweet guy.
But that's because you like bad boys.
I do. It's true.
Well, you fall in the first promo picture, he has, like, piercings, and he looks really rugged.
Right?
And I never saw that in the movie, and never I was really happened. Disappointed.
Wait, he had piercings?
Yeah, I think he has, like, eyebrow piercings. In the
Was his little stitches from his prison. Yeah.
Oh,
I was like, did they have a promo picture with nipple rings?
That is kind of funny. They made a big deal about the first promo picture that they released, and that still isn't even in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always that way, though. There's always stuff that gets left out in the film from the promotional material. But
I don't know. I feel like you get Paul Rudd, and you get Paul Rudd. Like, they sort of casted who they, like, it felt like, in a good way, I was watching a Judd Apatow movie when he was on screen. Because they were going for sort of that Paul Ruddishness.
If you take the superhero elements out of this and all the stuff with Michael Douglas, then yeah, you'll basically have this, like, Bobby Cannavale is the guy who's with Paul Rudd's ex-wife, who's played by, of course, Judy Greer.
Yeah.
Professional... sweetheart that I got married to too young and divorced.
Professional mom.
Yeah, professional mom. Yeah, and then you bring in Evangeline Lilly as the, here's your new meet cute boss who's kind of stuck up bitch. But she'll warm to you.
By the way, the world where we live where Evangeline Lilly is your consolation, that's a pretty good world. Let's just value that.
I'll take second place, thank you.
But going back to Paul Rudd being affable, I think it's a great move because it cleanses the mouth from all the douchebaggery of Robert Downey Jr.'s character.
Well,
because it's just so true. Over the top.
Which, admittedly, he's so snarky as to be, you can see someone, you couldn't even be friends with that guy.
Right.
Yeah. It is very, I found it very effective that he actually gets into a fight with somebody and he's apologizing through the entire
thing. Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I respect you so much.
Well, and that specific sequence, which is one of the few cameos by an Avenger in the film, I don't want to say which one. To spoil
that's
for,
okay. You already
for
dropped
you guys.
Spoiler, so.
But not
you,
that.
You
one.
You want to tell him who it was?
No, I don't. I just said that.
I can tell you.
But that is one of the that is one of the funnier scenes in the whole film. I got to say,
well awesome. Executed too. I thought that scene was done.
What's
well.
The thing is, like, I think this film is actually at its best during the fight sequences, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
that more so than almost any of the other Marvel films. The fight sequences here are just a kind of a joy to watch, mm-hmm.
and they're so not to like be punny, but they're small scale instead of like the. Instead of the world being in danger, it's like, oh, they're just in danger in this bedroom.
Right.
And I thought that was a lot better for...
Yeah, the stakes are still high, but not in terms of, like, you know...
New York's gonna die.
They're not dropping cities on shit.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when they definitely drop some, like, hey, if you shrink too far, there's some funky shit out there. And they, you know, do everything but say, this is the Microverse, except we can't call it because we don't own the Micronauts anymore.
And all of that ties into some of the backstory for Hank Pym as well. And like, hey, so wasn't Hank Pym, didn't he have a wife at some point here?
Yes.
Maybe it was
why,
in the
why
comics?
Do we have Hope Van Dyne and not Janet Van Dyne?
I did laugh that, like, in the trailer, before I even knew who she was playing, I saw the haircut and went, yeah, she's got to be related to Janet Van Dyne. Because haircuts are genetic, as Joe pointed out.
I had a blast with this, and, you know, if anything, this shows me, you know, not necessarily that Marvel can do no wrong, but that their formula, sticking to it is not a bad idea, because of all the Marvel films that I've gone into, this was the one that I was like, wow, it sounds like they're making a lot of bad choices with this, and, you know, because I was like, why are you even bothering to not start with Hank Pym, and why don't you have Janet Van Dyne, and why is Yellowjacket the villain, and there was so much, you know, baggage for me as somebody who is a big Hank Pym fan of the stuff in the comics, and I was kind of expecting more of a clusterfuck, and I got in this and was like, wow, not only are you selling this to me, I'm really enjoying it and having a great time. There's definitely stuff in here that, you know, like I said, there's some emotional threads that get sewn up a little too fast, there's definitely some stuff that I wish they had done differently, but taken as a whole, the film's a fun ride.
Well, I think, their stupid, campy comedy that they usually do in a Marvel movie, because it was delivered by a stupid, campy person, it worked out well. Like, it was just so cute. Like the voiceovers of him retelling, like, this is how I found out about this, and he's doing
Michael Pena?
Yeah, and he's doing all the voices for everybody. I think it worked perfectly.
Well, there's a lot of humor in here that was just plain there to be cute. And I don't have any inherent problem with it. It's kind of like this is more directed at littler kids than any of the other Marvel films so far in a lot of ways. If it wasn't for the very complicated exposition. Yeah. But they figured out the Phantom Menace, so well, I guess, you know.
It's the first Marvel movie where Thomas the Tank Engine makes a cameo.
That's so true. Yeah. Yeah, in a big way.
When is Brian coming back?
All I'm saying is look out, Galactus, because Thomas the Tank Engine is here.
See, the Marvel series has been so into restructuring their canon for the purpose of this universe they've created, the film universe, that none of those changes really ever bothered me. I was always like, okay, that's cool, you've got to make... I don't want you making it awkward to fit. Because yeah. You feel like you have to stick to the comics, but it felt like it was still honoring the spirit of the comics nonetheless all the way through.
Yeah.
My problem with this was really pacing more.
I just exhort the audience out there, you know, shrink your expectations and this movie will grow on you.
I want to echo Chris, like, one of the great things I loved about you changing it, if you don't change it, there's a misstep that they took with Hank Pym that you almost have to include if you're going to be accurate. Where he hits Janet, and it's like, I'm glad that didn't make it into the movie.
Yeah, no, I did not want that.
They ruined that character.
Yeah, I mean, the spousal abuse thing from the comic books, when they decided with Iron Man they were not going to go with Demon in a Bottle at any point in the story, I was like, yeah, they're not going to go with that either.
I was happy. I was like, good, you ruined that character, because like, once a hero does that, it's tainted. It's a stain on your badge. Like, you can't come back from that.
Yeah, that has haunted Hank Pym in the comics for, like, what, 25, 30 years since
then? Yeah, and it was very, very clumsily done. It was never meant to, you know, it was never meant to be like, hey, this is part of Hank Pym's personality. He's the spousal abuse guy. But because so many lazy writers have opted to go with that route, so they, you know, it has become this really dark stain on the character's history.
And that's something that I really liked about this movie. Hank Pym, like, I've read the last 20 years of Marvel. I don't have as much of a history as you do, Bo. But what I've noticed about Hank Pym when they write in the comic books, it's really hard to distinguish him from Mr. Fantastic and Iron Man. And this is one of the few pieces of media that did that well, and they sort of took the tack that the Avengers cartoon from a few years ago did, where he's more of a pacifist. He's more of a, I just really wanted to help. I don't want to...
Favorite bit, the best I've seen him handle in a long time is Charles Soule's She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Where she's just like, hey, this rival company, they've discovered shrinking technology, and one of their guys has, like, shrunken himself and disappeared into his backyard, and she calls up Hank, we're just going to shrink ourselves down and take a poke around, I just wanted to check before we do that. He's like, okay, all of that stuff you just said to me, do not do any of it, you will get killed.
We already set Rick Moranis out there, I don't know.
No, but you say Rick, he sort of reminds me of, like, Ray from Ghostbusters, he's just a good guy.
Yeah.
He just wants to do science.
I mean, I guess my problem is I felt like maybe he needed a little bit more finesse on the punch-up of the dialogue. I was like, this isn't as funny as you think it is, but the sequences where he's, like I said, the apologies while he's fighting somebody, that's where both sides work. And just in general in the fights, you know, the whole, isn't it adorable that he names all his aunts?
Anthony. There's definitely, like, you can tell at various parts, it's like, okay, here's where they took a big chunk of the Edgar Wright script and kept it, and here's where they did some really hasty stitch work, and I will say, that it, you know, if there's anything that really is a bad takeaway from this, is it you can definitely, it feels stitched together in parts.
Yeah.
That said, I'm still standing by my, man, this is a great popcorn movie. I might just go see it again. I had a blast.
Well, go ahead and finish with your final thoughts then.
This is a great popcorn movie. And it feels a little stitched together at times, but I had a blast. I give it 8.5 cubes of sugar out of 10.
Hell yeah.
I love the way they treat the characters. It's, you know, and Jason says something that's really nice. It's a great palate cleanser after Avengers Age of Ultron.
And did you mean Joe said something?
Joseph, sorry. Okay. Sorry. It's like, because that one...
Someone.
That was so serious. And I enjoyed that one, but this is just light and fluffy. It's like cotton candy. Paul Rudd's great. Script is stitched together. So for all those... And the effects are amazing. All those reasons, I give it 8 in beginning rays out of 10.
Joe?
Bo's really gone down the Pym hole, if you will, so we won't need to cover any of that territory. But I just think it was fun and got out of the Marvel up its own ass kind of viewpoint. So I'm going to give it 8 charming Paul Rudd smiles.
Tracy?
As much as I always love the Marvel movies when they first come out, and I thought the action was really well done here, I guess maybe I do love like the douchiness of Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man as opposed to the
bad boys.
Yeah, as opposed to the fluffiness of Paul Rudd's Scott Lang. I thought
he rides a Harley and he's going to disappoint me.
My dad does not approve.
I like Michael Douglas as Hank Pym. I thought that was done really well. I definitely didn't hate this movie. It's just I always come out of Marvel movies going, yep, I knew I was going to love that because I love these movies. And this is the first one where it's like, love it. Mm. Didn't hate it. Thought it was good. Thought it was fun. This is what, like the 13th movie? Like at some point they're going to have to start being on the lower end of the totem pole for me as opposed to the top. So, I would give it a really solid 6.5 out of 10 incinerated baby goats.
Jenny?
I guess I don't have like the Marvel background that you guys have, so I actually was not a fan of this movie. I thought there were some good parts to it, like the action I thought was great. The scene you keep mentioning about him apologizing during the fight, that was funny. But I always felt like the jokes, they were jokes and I could tell they were there, but they didn't land for me because of the direction or because of the way the dialogue was. I wasn't sure. But overall, it just felt super exposition-y and I felt like Ant-Man wasn't given the movie that he might deserve. I think, like, in a second movie, I would enjoy it a lot more, but it just felt so weighed down by itself. So I would give it maybe 5.5 wasps out of 10.
I kind of come somewhere between around where you and JC are feeling about this, I think. But to me, the third act was so good that it really redeemed a lot of my problems earlier. It was like, it is really worth watching a film that was twice as not good as the first two acts to get to this terrific third act in this film that's so much fun. And I don't think the first two acts are bad per se. They're just, yeah, you can see that stitching. And it does seem like each act is so distinct and like there was trouble piecing it all together and that the Paul Rudd, he's just a little too fluffy for me to be as interested in him, maybe. Maybe it's a little too obvious the way they're trying to make him such a nice guy. Mm. That I was like, yeah, and you're boring. Now I know how all the girls in high school felt.
Yeah, but bad Paul Rudd is bad. He'll set the world on fire. So you just wait.
I agree. Not only do I think he'd be better in another movie, maybe he'd be better as part of a group of people working together with different powers. Maybe not Avengers per se, which will happen eventually, whether like it or not, but you know, like a movie where it's him and maybe two other people with powers working together, and I wouldn't mind seeing another heist thing, because the basic concept that this is a heist film, ultimately, is a solid one.
You want Ant-Man 2, Ant-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yes.
Or Ants 11.
Yeah, exactly. Ants 11.
I kind of like the idea of Marvel Studios kind of exploring sort of like bottle episodes in TV shows, like have two or three of the Avengers and this guy go over here, do their own thing, kind of like the Wolverine movie from a couple years ago. Like,
that was cool.
This is his own little tiny thing in this big universe, and it doesn't have big consequences or, you know, nothing impactful, but just, you know.
It's like you're building this universe, do something with it.
Yeah.
But I give it 7 out of 10, wish they were a little bit more irredeemable Ant-Man.
Oh. Miss Marvel, you're my favorite superhero.